I'd like to convene the Finance Committee. We don't have a quorum yet, but what we have done in the past, as members know, is that we've begun the presentation of a bill. But we, of course, can't take any action on the bill until a quorum would be present. And once we have a quorum, then we'll have a couple of motions and an author's amendment by Representative Murphy.
Oh, do we have one?
So it's my understanding that we're going to have several people from Representative Murphy's division involved with the presentation of the bill this morning, and so Representative Murphy, do you want to make any comments before we begin? We can't take your motions until we have a quorum. Or do you want to just start with Representative Morgan?
Representative Morgan is ready to start.
Okay, Representative Morgan, then if you want to present the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, very much. Members of the committee, this this bill before you, or that will be before you shortly, is the effort, reflects the efforts of the Cultural and Outdoor Resources Finance Division. It really is a team effort, the work of the committee and the work of many others who participated throughout the process starting in very early in January. As the committee went through. On November 4, 2008, the people of the state of Minnesota did something that most think is very amazing. In the middle of a recession, they voted to increase their taxes. They voted to increase their taxes to pay for the outdoors, clean water, parks and trails, and arts, history, and cultural heritage. They voted to increase their taxes by 0.375%, which, according to the February forecast, is going to provide, over the course of this biennium, $480 million in new resources to spend in these areas. If you look at the beige handout provided for you in your packets, you will see on the front side the language of the constitutional amendment that was passed by the voters last November. The constitutional amendment language divides the resources of $480 million into four funds. The first is the Outdoor Heritage Fund, which receives 33% of those resources. The second is the Clean Water Fund, which also receives 33% of those resources, with 5% of that fund required by Constitution to be dedicated to protect drinking water sources. The third fund is the Parks and Trails Fund, which gets 14.25% of those resources, and the fourth fund is the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, which receives 19.75% of those resources. Our job as a committee was to appropriate those resources in each of those specific areas. An additional job, as required by the constitutional language, if you take a look at the other handout we gave you, which represents a memo written by Mark Shepard in House Research, was to meet the constitutional requirement that these funds be used to supplement traditional sources of funding and not substitute traditional resources of funding. We had quite a bit of discussion on this issue. We took great pains to make sure that this bill and the other agency bill, and also the bill from the Environment and Natural Resources Committee, made sure that we were abiding by this constitutional requirement to be supplementing and not substituting traditional sources of funding in these areas. Our task truly was unique when we started out. We were really starting from scratch. We had no base budget. We had no precedent to work off. We were starting from scratch, and the Chair, Representative Murphy, did a wonderful job of getting the committee moving towards consensus in developing these appropriation bill. She started out by giving us homework assignments. The first two homework assignments, and these are not only for the committee, by the way, as many people who are here in the audience today understand, this is also for the audience members. and they all can participate. The first homework assignment was to go out and ask people in different age groups why they voted yes, and to come back and report to the committee, because she believed, and we all believed, that people voted yes for a reason. They didn't vote to raise their taxes for no reason at all, and we wanted the committee to have some information to help guide its work. She also asked folks to come in and share how they use the resources that we would be receiving funding for in this bill, and I have a picture here that I'll ask the page to send around, just because I like to brag about my voice. This is a picture of us using a resource in our backyard, really, a park in Burnsville. So this was done by all of the members of the committee, and most, although I think Representative Murphy is still accepting assignment number two, for those of you who were not able to participate on that, most members of the audience. With input from committee members and stakeholders who attended these meetings regularly, the committee unanimously adopted a set of investment goals on March 9. And if you take a look at the back side of that constitutional amendment sheet, the beige sheet, you will see the committee's investment goals. These goals basically coalesced around the following principles. The idea that this is the people's money, and we wanted to make an impact on people of all ages in all parts of the state. This is an opportunity to create jobs in tough times. This is an opportunity for immediate and long-term benefits. This will be a legacy for us to pass on to future generations. Those were the that would be my summary of these, of those investment goals that you see before you. We use those goals to guide us in sorting through the many recommendations we received. Just to give you an example of how difficult our task was, in the area of the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, the February forecast has us with about just around $90 million over the course of the next next biennium. Unfortunately, there were requests from several groups for 50% of those funds, and by several I mean more than two, which by my math is all the 50% we had to spend. We had additional requests for $25 million, $12 million, and several smaller requests, probably that added up to close to $200 million, far more than the resources we had to work with. But as I said, this bill was a team effort of the committee and the stakeholders, guided by our investment goals and informed by a process that nobody can deny was inclusive.
Morgan, we now have a quorum present, so I want to officially convene the meeting. And maybe if you want to take just a little breather, we'll go through a couple of motions here to get the bill officially before us, if that's all right.
Fabulous. Thank you.
Representative Murphy.
I move that the Cultural and Outdoor Resources Finance Division report for House File 1231, the first committee engrossment.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, I move House File 1231, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration.
Okay, that motion is before us, and we do have an author's amendment, and I assume that's the way you'd like to have that in, added to the bill, so that that's the way you can present the bill.
That's correct.
Okay, so Representative Murphy moves the amendment A090587. Any discussion on the amendment? Should put it in the order that the author would like to present the bill, or Mr. Morgan. All those in favor then signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. We have a couple of other amendments, but we'll maybe take those then after we've presented the bill. Representative Morgan.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, can you explain to the committee the purpose for the motion to move the bill to rules rather than ways and means?
This is one of the major appropriations bills that under House rules had an earlier deadline. And very early in the process, I had conversations with Representative Murphy, and as Representative Morgan explained, they this division was in a rather unique situation, literally starting at zero, and they simply needed more time, and we were aware of that from the beginning, and actually they're on the timeline that Representative Murphy shared with me very early in the process, but that's why the motion for rules.
And Mr. Chair?
And then it'll be from Rule 3 referred to the way we're doing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to talk briefly about the individual fund expenditures in the first four articles, and then I'll talk about Articles 5 through 8. For each of the articles, I have folks here who worked on them. Representative Hansen will be able to answer questions about Article 1, which is the expenditures from the Outdoor Heritage Fund. Representative Wagenius, who's on the committee, can answer questions about Article 2, about the Clean Water Fund. Representative Lilly is back here to answer questions from Article 3 about the Parks and Trails Fund. And Chair Murphy and I will be happy to answer questions about Article 4. On appropriations from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. In Article 1, we accepted all of the recommendations of the Outdoor Heritage Council for appropriations. There were some members who had expressed some concerns that their recommendations did not match up entirely with the investment goals. However, in their defense, the Outdoor Heritage Council's defense, we didn't adopt our investment goals until the 9th of March, and they were well into their work at that point. It is the committee's hope, and we discussed this with the chair of the Outdoor Heritage Council, that in future years we can more closely work together to align their recommendations with the committee's investment goals. We did reduce their request for staffing from 3 to 1.25 FTE, and we did provide funding for the legislative auditor to conduct financial program and restoration audits. In Article 2, it was a combination of bills that came through the Environmental Policy and Finance Committee, as well as state government finance. Great care was taken to make sure, again, that these recommendations were meeting the constitutional requirements to supplement traditional sources of funding and not to substitute those traditional sources. Article 3 was the Parks and Trails Fund. We made sure that the state parks and trails, the metropolitan regional parks and trails, and also the statewide regional parks of significance all had access in Article 3 to resource opportunities. And finally, in Article 4, the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, again, we had a wide variety of recommendations in this area, and we tried to do our best to listen to that input. We simply didn't have the resources to get every recommendation that came before us. But we did make sure that resources were distributed to a broad group of arts, history, and cultural organizations to assure maximum impact and statewide access. Examples of this are the resources we appropriated to the Regional Arts Council, statewide and local historical societies grants, the statewide public TV and radio appropriations, regional library systems, and statewide arts access grants to schools and communities. It's important to note that in each of the four areas, we deliberately chose to leave money in reserve, really, I think, for three reasons. First of all, cash flow. We have not yet begun to see these resources flow into our state's coffers. It will not begin until the 1st of July. The state really won't begin to get checks from the businesses until the middle of August, so there is a cash flow issue. We also had concerns about the volatility of the revenues in these difficult economic times, and we also knew that we were coming back in January or February, and we would have opportunities to make new appropriations if there was a need. In Article 5, that is the governance section of the bill. Really, I think in the minds of the chair and myself and many others on the committee, this area is really the crown jewel of this bill, because instead of just establishing appropriations in these different areas, what the committee attempted to do was to establish a governance system that really will tie together this 25-year legacy that we're going to leave for future generations. The governance section establishes accountability and oversight of expenditures from all four funds through the LCC and the legislative auditor. It also minimizes the growth of government and the expansion of bureaucracy, goals from our investment goals that you see before you. It also provides for a framework for both short-term and long-term plans to be developed by stakeholders to recommend to the legislature in each of the fund categories. This will assure that the use of these resources maximizes benefits and that those uses will be thoughtful, forward-looking, and truly a legacy to the future. Article 6 is about land management. It provides a mechanism for the long-term management of purchased lands or easements, and it also provides a mechanism to deal with PILT in a new way, and that was developed by, I believe, Representative Junkie and Dill, so they can answer questions. Representative Junkie can certainly answer questions specific to that area. Article 7 contains miscellaneous definitions of terms, funds, and grants that are described in the bill. And Article 8 is about invasive species. Just recently, we have heard concerns about the emerald ash borer that is at least on our doorstep in Wisconsin, if not already in the state. Article 8 appropriates additional resources from the Outdoor Heritage Fund to the Department of Agriculture and or the DNR to address this problem. It also imposes an exterior quarantine to keep possibly diseased wood out of the state. And with that, I and my friends and colleagues on the committee will be happy to answer any questions.
And would you like at this point your other presenters to comment, or should we go to questions? Representative Anson, you're able to have anything to add at this point, or
Mr. Chair, I anticipate there's probably some questions.
But you're there for question purposes as well, along with Representative Lilly then. Okay. Then Representative Champion.
My question is about Article 4. And I was checking, and perhaps you can show me if there is any language that would be a guiding principle that will connect communities with academic challenges to scientifically based arts initiatives. So is there any guiding language in there that would guide, let's say, the arts board and the others to make those necessary connections? And if you have that language in there, that I would like for you to point me to that.
Representative Murphy would... Representative Morgan.
Mr. Chair, we can look for the language specifically if Representative Champion would like that. Representative Champion, there is a language in there specifically that talks about best practices in art. Do you have it there?
Or is it
on
page
85. The definition of the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund is there, but there is specific language to guide these groups as we move forward in developing this plan to recommend back to the legislature that requires them to make recommendations based on best practices. I think we didn't use the word science in the arts section because whereas science is very appropriate for the Outdoor Heritage Fund and the Clean Water Fund and maybe even the Parks and Trails Fund, we didn't feel that science best fit the way you should make decisions on arts and cultural heritage. Better best practices was the word we used.
Representative Champion.
But is it not true that science would be an appropriate term as especially as we're thinking in terms of arts programming, because one of the significant bases of having arts programs, especially in academically challenged communities, is because it can be used as another form of education that would move that community from its challenges around academics to a better place. There was a recent Harvard study that showed that there is a connection, a scientific connection between individuals who learn to read music and math and science. So I would really like to know that because we presented some information that was scientifically based to the committee, and we believe that to be very important. And so it seems to, for lack of a better way of putting it, ignore communities of color by not making that connection. And so if we could respond to that would be helpful for me.
Representative Lauper.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Champion. In the arts and cultural heritage area, we do reference both science and best practices, because in some areas that is more the term of art, and references to research-based efforts. We do not target the money that will roll through the Department of Education in that level of detail in terms of the selection criteria as they review the grants. We do direct everyone who's going to administer these grants to ensure that they're distributed equitably and to establish measurable outcomes and to measure the achievement against those measurable outcomes. And so I think that you'll find that that direction will lead to investments that use best practices and scientific-based research when it's available in making sure that these programs are implemented in arts education in a way that makes a difference.
Ken, I'm going to see if I'm getting testimony from others who came to testify. Can you talk about how communities of color, be it the Latino community, African American community, other communities of color, really fare when we think in terms of the arts force and others distributing competitive grants to them?
I think we all heard your question, but it was a little hard, so maybe if you have future questions, if you could move the mic a little closer, Representative Champion. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, that's one of the reasons that, that's one of the major reasons that we put in the framework for developing a plan, and we gave time to develop a plan. Our committee start, as Representative Morgan said, our committee started at zero base, and we got all the way up, and it was strongly recommended that we make appropriations this year. If I had had my way, we would not have one appropriation in this bill. We would have developed a plan, but it was the will of the legislature, the caucus, the people that were coming before us, that we get money out in this critical time to the all sections of the state and all areas of the state in a balanced way and spend money this year. And so we found that we had to make we had a fourth then, and we had to go the line of what we were going to spend money on, one time only funding for this year, and then we had the responsibility of developing a framework and a plan for future spending. And what the things that were included, that were brought to our attention to include in the plan, were so immense that we knew that we could not do it by May 15th. And so we thought that there should be time in the second year, appropriations, and ongoing to over the summer and into the fall, and by January we would have groups working together to develop the framework and the plan for future spending. And so we would be responsible fiscal agents in the future. And that's where the things that Representative Champion testified to and the people that he brought in testified to will be given a lot more time and balance than what we had time for in this Bill 1231.
Representative Champion.
And I sincerely appreciate
I
sincerely appreciate Chair Murphy because he has worked, you know, tirelessly and very hard. I'm just concerned, you know, because I am an arts person and I love arts, and I do understand the nexus between arts and academic achievement. I understand how arts can be not only a mere expression, but it can be something that sets the tone for, you know, great outcomes, both those who are performing, those who are seeing it. But I am challenged, I must admit, by what I see here, because even though I accept the chair's notion of giving more time, what happens in more time, there continues to be other communities that continue to struggle without resources and intentionality when it comes to making sure that they're a part of the plan and a part of the process. And that has been historically one of the challenges, even in rural Minnesota. So I just wanted to go on record of saying that I'm disappointed and that I'm challenged by this.
We have several people on the list, and I'll just take them in order, then Rip Sim Junkie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to either the author, authors, or others, I'm going to draw attention to page 100, sections 2 and 3. I've got some concerns with that. I'm just reading these sections for the first time. On invasive species, in particular the emerald ash borer. Members, section 3 is appropriation to fire up the Forest Protection Task Force again and involve stakeholders and do some work here. Unfortunately, you know, from where I sit, this task force is one that's already finished their work, and I'm concerned. I don't think that we can get that fired up and done again and just basically repeating what they've just recently completed. I guess what I'd ask and request is that we delete that section, move the money back up into section 2, and then amend that section, like on 100.5, effectively responding to the threat or presence of plant pests and update the state's emerald ash borer response plan. Frankly, members, on emerald ash borer, it's knocking at our door. It's not the time to sit down and study anymore. We're actually moving into action plans. And I do have the Department of Agriculture as well as Department of DNR here that can testify that we don't think that Section 3 can be accomplished. This is a very large working group, and they've already done their work. And it's time for action now, and I think, you know, Section 3 is very problematic to me at this point in time, and I'd like to see that removed and Section 2 rejiggered to make sure that we're moving forward on emerald ash borer, and particularly response plan, because we're all ready to go on that. For those that don't know, the Department of Agriculture is charged with putting up that wall, if you will, and monitoring and hopefully preventing things from coming into the state, which is where we're sitting right now. But in southwest Wisconsin, it's right near our been-discovered emerald ash borer is there. And so we're doing some heavy-duty monitoring and other things. I'd rather have that money up top. If you see the last line in Section 2 also allows the commissioner to award grants to local units of government to other entities. I'd rather have the money available up there. We know what we're doing with our forest plan right now. That's already been done. That task force has done their work already. And now it's time to move into action plans. So I guess I'd lay that on the table at this point. If you want testimony from either department on this, they can certainly come and do that. But this was new language to me that I had not seen yet.
I think what I'd like to do, Representative Junkie, is I've got three additional people on the list, and then you referenced an amendment. Representative House, I think, has a similar amendment in our packets. But after
I didn't even see the House amendment. Sorry to steal your thunder. I appreciate this.
We will take I think I'll take questions then from Representative Kissmeyer, Simon, and Stefan, and then we'll revert to the two amendments that are in the packets, if that's all right, Representative John Shervin,
sure.
If you referenced that section already. Representative Kissmeyer.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would be glad to defer and let them stay on track on this emerald ash borer. If they want to just stay on it, if they need time, I can ask my question.
I just didn't finish those three questions and then revert back to,
because
we have other, at least one other amendment.
Okay.
So, Representative Kiffman.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman. On line 56.3, there's a word there that I haven't seen used before, not quite sure what it means, especially in this context. It's reversed. It's under Article 4. Under D, on page 55, 34, it starts the Artist Economic Development Fund and appropriated for individual grants for the purposes of economic subvention or artistic development. And I would appreciate an explanation of what that means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kiffmeyer, that's a great question. We had the same question for House Research when we were presented with that language for the first time. As I recall, the explanation from House Research was the subvention refers to an economic support, kind of a, the chair talked, and maybe you heard her on the radio this morning, talking about the WPA and what that meant towards to art in the 30s. And this is the same kind of thing, how these will support arts in their cause. Economic subvention is an economic support for them.
Representative Kiffmeyer, does that answer your question?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I would say, you know, why not just use economic support? I mean, is there a reason why not to state it like it is?
Mr. Chair, point well taken.
Representative Kahn, on that point.
If the if every day legislators learn a new word, it's really
good. Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple general questions, a couple specific. Representative Morgan, just so I understand it, this isn't going in anyone's base budget, right? These are you know, standalone from year to year.
Mr. Chair, Representative Simon, exactly right. These are one-time expenditures. There are no base budgets being created here in this bill. We are making very sure that the folks who are getting these resources know that they may not ever receive these resources again, or they may receive resources purposed differently based on the plans that are developed over the course of the next year.
Chair. Representative Simon. And Representative Morgan. So do you foresee making supplemental appropriations of some kind next year? To the extent you have any resources left, it sounds like you did reserve some, or do you see your appropriation work being done for the biennium for the most part?
Representative Morgan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Simon, I think that would probably be a better question for the chair of the committee to answer. I believe that would be a committee decision.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, there will definitely be changes in the biennial appropriations next year based on what is developed in the plans. And we will review every appropriation again next year with the plans in mind and how the plans were developed.
As I understand,
and Representative Regenius can add to that based on some of the appropriations that are in the Clean Water Fund are there from our budget because she front-loaded a couple of the projects in her omnibus environmental committee appropriations because we could only supplement and not supplant, and she saved us from supplanting by doing the base budgeting in her clean water fund recommendation.
Thank you, and thank you, Chair Murphy. Let me just add one other thing, Representative Simon. The constitutional amendment for water asks for prevention, drinking water source protection, groundwater protection, and protection for lake services and streams. In the proposals that we received, both from agencies and others, there was not much with regard to groundwater. We have very little work being done on our groundwater, and not much with regard to prevention. Very little. So it was the recommendation of the committee to Representative Murphy's committee that not all the money be spent, with the opportunity for folks to come back in January with proposals for both prevention and groundwater.
And I was going to say, Representative Murphy, I understand that when you describe the planning process, that's going to be an interim activity in preparation for the next
session,
so everybody's clear on that. Okay, Representative Simon.
Thank you. Just one quick specific follow-up, and I don't know who is best to answer this. It has to do with Article 4. But first, kind of a disclaimer here. I think you guys did a great job with a very difficult task, and I know it's very easy for everyone who didn't get their stuff in the bill to criticize it, but that's not what I'm trying to do. I'm just looking for an explanation. You may know I've been working with some of the film folks, both on the film board and then these outside groups, and Representative Bigham has been more active than I have been, so I was sort of late to that game. So I know that some of them had outsized requests that were you know, to put it mildly, ambitious. But I see here that they got $50,000 for the film board, and I'm wondering if you have any explanation for them or that I could give to them as to why they might not have gotten more. And I know everyone could ask the same question about their thing in the bill, but as you can imagine, compared to where they were, which was very, very ambitious, and what they got, there's actually a big difference. But they maintain that an investment in the film board will help us get more films here to Minnesota. We got the film, the Coen Brothers film, A Serious Man, that film last fall in Minnesota. It was great for the economy and just great for the area in general. And they maintain that we barely got that, and only because the Coen Brothers are from here and were able to argue with the studio, look, even though you could do it cheaper in other states, we really want it to be authentic here. It's supposed to take place in Minnesota. We're from Minnesota. And they maintain that more money to the film board would attract other films, and that we've in fact lost out on films in the past because we didn't have as sweet a package as some other states in the country. So could you just respond as to what the treatment was as the film in general? Again, I want to emphasize, I think you did great work, and I'm voting for this and accepting what you did. I'm just looking for your insights as to that part of it.
Mr. Morgan. Mr. Chair, Representative Simon, it's a very good question, and you really got the gist of it. There were so many requests out there, and we could only do so much. What we wanted to do was make sure that we were focused on the plan for moving forward. And we hope that representatives from the film board will participate in the development of the long-term plan and continue to make their case for the benefits that providing resources, additional resources from this fund to the film board will make and have the impact it could have on arts and jobs in the state of Minnesota. So hopefully they'll participate in that planned process, and we'll see what happens moving forward.
Representative Evans.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have a question for Representative Hansen on Article 1.
Representative
Hansen. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen, my question, as you might imagine, is relating to Article 1 on page 8, the section that deals with the grant program, the $4 million in grants. Now, I heard this last in state government finance, and my recollection was the Lessard Council had chosen the National Fish and Wildlife Federation or foundation to manage the grants program, and I think what they had testified was that they were going to, it would cost them $240,000 over the course of 3 years to administer the program. DNR testified that it would be $280,000 per year, which would be $840,000 to manage the program. And in this language now, it doesn't have either listed specifically, but it does say up to 2.5% of this appropriation may be used for administering the grant. The 2.5% of $4 million is only $100,000. So I'm wondering if first of all, who will be managing the grants program with this language, and how is it going to get done with the 2.5%? Or am I just reading the language incorrectly?
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair and Representative Pepin, maybe just a little background too on how that came to be. Is the Outdoor Heritage Council began meeting in December and established a subcommittee to look at this small grant program. And so that subcommittee was meeting, and those minutes of those meetings are available on the Outdoor Heritage Council's website. They interviewed the Department of Natural Resources, the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation, and made a recommendation to the council that the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation be selected to operate the small grants program with a $4 million appropriation. And so that is the recommendation of the council, is the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation. In Representative Kahn's committee, that was changed to the Department of Natural Resources. The council, and I should just forward that they, as I testified in that committee, they support the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation being the grant or to receive the $4 million to distribute those grants. The way the bill is written now is that it would be the Department of Natural Resources that would administer the grant program. And
most of the language in terms of the advancement of some funds, the purpose, the amount up to $400,000, the match from the non-state funds. All of those things are the existing language, or the, I believe the existing language, with the exception of that 2.5, up to 2.5%. I believe, and Representative Morgan could correct me, that in terms of administrative support throughout the bill, it's a 2.5%, because we were seeing agencies and entities come forward with 5, 10, 1, I mean, it was all across the board. And so I think the committee made the recommendation in the bill that 2.5% administrative cost. But again, I want to make sure that you know that the council supports the original. And maybe Representative Kahn, I know she and Representative Lagunias have had conversations with the Department of Natural Resources on that.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hansen, now I know DNR testified that they didn't actually want to administer this program. They didn't think it was necessarily appropriate, and I personally feel it's a little bit of a conflict of interest for the DNR to do it anyway. Specifically, though, I'm particularly confused about the 2.5% because that's $100,000. So how the DNR testified that it would cost them $840,000 to manage the program, how the 2.5 doesn't line up. Is that coming? Is that in, it just doesn't read right to me. Maybe you could help me clarify that.
On this point, I think Representative Kahn and Representative Lagunias wanted to comment as well. I would defer to the Representative Kahn.
Yes. Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Pepin, the thought behind this is a state program and it should be administered by a state agency, not an out-of-state private foundation. And the Washington-based private foundation, and the 2.5% came from a lot of experience. We actually had conflicting testimony from different parts of DNR, from the financial part, and then from the commissioner's office as to what it should cost. But part of the experience went back to the experience with LCMR and LCCMR that has a maximum of 4%. For administrative costs whenever they let a grant, and the and they've never gone over 2.2%. So the 2.5% seems to be a very reasonable reason number. And I think the point is, we have to remember when we're giving things to state agencies, we've got to remember that there are an awful lot of people working at that state agency, and that those people continue to do the jobs that they have. And things like, for example, land sales and land transfers. There's a whole set of people in the Attorney General's office that do that. And they don't just stop working just because there are some new projects. That's part of their job. And so, for example, to reimburse everybody for every new thing they may have to do when they're supposed to do these things anyway doesn't seem appropriate. But the 2.5% fits in with all of the history of grants management, with the grants management that's gone on, a small grants management that's gone on from DNR. It's a very satisfactory result. And we just thought that to increase that by a factor of 4 was just totally inappropriate, particularly when that money was going out of state.
Representative Plugin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Pepin, if you'll, Article 3 is the Parks and Trails Fund, and in that there is a grant section actually for more money than in the Heritage section. And when we put that grant portion together, I asked DNR what, since we knew DNR was going to administer it, or we were asking to administer it, I asked them, what should I put down as the administrative cost? And they said 2.5%. So that's what you see in this bill on page 50, is up to 2.5% of this appropriation may be used for administering the grants, and that's the grants in the Parks and Trails section. So that was DNR just telling us that's what we need.
Representative Rucavino, are you on this point?
No, I have a whole number of points to make.
Mr. Chair. I'm not on there. Okay. Representative Heffernan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it sounds to me then like the DNR will have to absorb that extra $740,000 cost that they said, that I very specifically in committee remember them saying they needed to hire three FTEs to get this done. And so I'm wondering, I think it would be appropriate, Mr. Chair, if we'd heard from the DNR to see if this is possible, because this is like, this is quite a change from the earlier committee when I, and I know that in talking to the DNR, they felt very strongly that they could not get this program administered with less money. So I'm just wondering if the DNR could maybe testify as to how that thinking had changed and how they're able to absorb this new cost.
Yeah, I think Mr. Meyer is excited that he wanted to comment with coming forward to answer the question.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Holder.
And Mr. Chair, if three FTE costs $800,000 for three additional FTE, I want a job.
Well, maybe Ms. Myers will clarify that.
Mr. Chair, members of the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. There are several different grant proposals within this bill that the DNR would be operating. One, the Parks and Trails grants are completely different than these conservation partner grants that we're talking about. We are concerned, well, the level of funding for the local initiative grant program is much less because these are a lot less work, follow through and things like that. To do the conservation partners program, it's going to cost us a lot more than 2.5%. Our proposal is based on $4 million a year, members, not just $4 million one-time appropriation. So if you can't compare the Wildlife Foundation proposal to the department's proposal, because we looked at an ongoing $4 million a year appropriation to this program, which does have substantial costs, and also the monitoring, the evaluation, the making sure that we have to put things on the web. It all adds up. What we've talked about is looking at, looking through the whole bill. The bill has 12 new processes related to reporting, data management, availability, auditing, web posting. This plus the Conservation Partners Grants process does put a lot of financial burden on the department. The finance bill that you guys just passed on the floor yesterday includes 5% to Bowser to administer their grants program. Now that doesn't cover any technical assistance at all. If you add technical assistance on that, that number goes way up. So you already appropriated money to an agency to do grants more than 2.5%. That's historically the historical number that's there. We don't feel we should be taking over this program. We're honoring the work of the Heritage Council, the Star Heritage Council, and for 2.5%, there's going to have to be some negotiations that take place as this bill moves forward as what won't get done, because we'll have to subsidize those activities through other parts of the department.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I won't belabor this, but to me it seems very strange that when the Outdoor Heritage Council chose a specific, the National Fish and Wildlife Federation to administer the program, the DNR testified that they don't want to administer the program because it's going to cost them a lot more. I think it was about $600,000 more is what they testified that it would cost. It just doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me why we put this language in and why we wouldn't go back to the original language, the language that was requested by the Lizard Out the Heritage Council. So I would suggest that you continue to work on this issue. It just doesn't add up to me, and I won't do anything now, but perhaps we could work together on this, Representative Hanson.
Representative Kahn on that point, and then we'll...
Yeah, well, just on the point of the testimony of the commissioner, when he said this is an ongoing program, not just for 1 year, one of the first things that you heard Chair Murphy say is that we're distinctly only doing 1 year programs. So we have a time to put the plan in place and make sure how programs operate in according to the plan. So there was an intention not to put any base budgeting in, which directly contrasts with what the commissioner just said. And I think the legislature is much better following Chair Murphy's lead on this.
Hey, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Morgan, besides the DNR administering grants, I see there a wide variety of commissioners are administering grants. is the 2.5% administrative cost. Is that a consistent standard that we are using for all of grants management by our different commissioners, or does it vary from agency to agency?
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, that's what we attempted to do. That's what I believe we have done, is have, for grants management, made sure that there was a 2.5% administrative cost coverage in the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Morgan, on these grants that are distributed, are these grants upfront dollars, or are they reimbursement grants?
I would think, Mr. Chair, I believe they're upfront grants. I don't think that there's any process in here for reimbursement for any of the grant funds, Representative Biskin.
Right. One final question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Morgan, on these grants, I think...
Representative Morgan?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen just pointed out to me that the Outdoor Heritage Council, the Outdoor Heritage Funds are reimbursement grants, and maybe he could address that, having served on that council, if Representative Biskins would like.
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, the Outdoor Heritage proposals are reimbursement with an exception to the federal project that was in there for the Tallgrass Prairie, because of the way the federal acquisition project process works, that's up front. So there, you'll see some language in there that project may go prior rather than reimbursement.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to comment on that, and then I have one final question to Representative Murphy, a comment that maybe we need to look at standards for when grants are reimbursement grants and when grants are upfront dollar grants as you look to refine this program. One final question, Representative Morgan. Is there language which allows for carryover of grant funds if they are not extended within the specific fiscal year or within the biennium? Are grantees allowed to carry over funds?
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, yes, there are. We want to make sure that folks are spending the money wisely and not spending the money in a rush.
Representative Biskins, then. We've got two more people who had their hands up, but I indicated earlier that, in fact, we went a little bit beyond that, that I wanted to revert back to those two amendments. Then we'll have time for more discussion after we dispose of those amendments. The first one was brought up by Representative Junkie, and in our packets there was an amendment that looks to me comes close to what Representative Junkie was talking about. Maybe we'll hold on that one a little bit.
Mr. Chairman, or,
okay. Representative House, you want to move the A-67 amendment?
Yes, I've moved the A-67 amendment, and I am going to slightly amend it to make it more clear and simpler.
So on my amendment, I would just take lines 1 through 3.
Okay, just drop the rest of it then.
Drop the rest of it, Mr. Chairman, and then I would add delete section 3 on page 100.
And okay, does everybody have that then? Representative House is moving lines 1 through 3 and deleting or removing section 3. And we're on page 100 in the bill. Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? And
I would like to comment on it just briefly.
Okay, Representative House.
I would like to echo what Representative Junkie so eloquently said, that the Department of Ag told me yesterday that they did not need the money. They're doing the program, and they're actually done with most of their planning. And the Department of Natural Resources also told me that this was not needed. And by doing the amendment the way we've done it, they can still work with the Forest Resource Council and others to do more if they want. And I think it's when an agency comes before us and says that we've done it, or we're doing it, or we can do it, we don't need the extra money, I think we need to listen. And I'm just doing what Representative Junkie evidently thought about before I did.
Hey, Representative Junkie, and I, you were out of the room, and I'm told that this amendment comes close to what you wanted.
Close, we might have to do some language later in section two, but, and I'm open to discussion. It's not a language thing, it's nothing else. It's really the timing on this, to get this a very large group of people. I guess I'd like to hear, I think the committee should hear from the Department of Natural Resources, which runs that Forest Resource Council, as well as ag, as to what they're doing now. I know there's concerns with people, and mine too, that if an outbreak of emerald ash borer, for example, would occur in the Twin Cities, what's our response? Who do we contact? Are we interfacing with the federal government and all the other folks out there? And I guess I'd like some reassurance that that is going on from the department. And and that's what this second section is asking to do, basically. And again, I know they're in the room, and I think that the authors are willing to work with them. We want to make sure we do the best we can on this, because it's a problem that's coming. And some of the problems with the Section 3 was even the deadline for reporting. And there's a very large group of stakeholders that get together, and they are currently together and working or about done. So I think it'd be helpful for the committee to hear the departments weigh in on this very briefly, Mr. Chair.
Okay, let me call Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Just to get so that y'all have the same background on where this came from, we had 2 years ago authorized the creation of the Forest Protection Task Force, which includes representatives of the federal government, state government, counties, cities, townships, the forest industries, the landscaping associations, kind of everybody who's involved with trees throughout the state of Minnesota. And they put together a report that was issued over a year ago. They have not met since. That report really only addressed up to the type of outbreak. Everyone had thought we'd had several years yet to have to deal with this. It's come much faster than we expected. The reality is our state agencies have done a good job in developing response plans that define their role up to the point of finding it. The role of local governments, the role of industries in helping us address this, in preventing it, in educating the public has not been expanded upon. The stakeholders want to be part of the solution. We looked at the report of the General Accounting Office on how six other states lost control of tree pests, and part of it was there wasn't a clear enough definition and integration of roles and responsibilities. And so our partners would like to have some meetings in which they, together with the state agencies, figure out if we find five outbreaks this summer, and they're in different types of communities, one's in a suburban community, one's in an inner city, one's in a small town where 50% of the trees are ash, which is not unusual, what does the Department of Ag do? What does the city do? Who has enforcement? On my little block, there are four chimeneas that burn firewood. We know that firewood is one of the biggest risks of this being spread. We have people who knock on doors, door to door, selling in the city. What's the responsibility of my city in seeing who's bringing that wood in and is it infected or not? And so we're just trying to sort out and get everyone around the table. These agencies are experts in what they do. But we all know that sometimes state agencies have some tension points when working with others, because everyone wants to be at the table and putting together the plan. And that's the intention of this. It doesn't necessarily have to be located within the Forest Resources Council. It was put there originally because it was addressing both issues that were in ag, which has emergency response, and DNR, which has more of the training, public outreach, community forest responsibilities. So it was seen as a sort of neutral ground to bring both parties together, but in the real implementation, it was a very collegial experience. The federal people said they had learned, they expected they would just do resources. They felt like they learned a lot more about how local governments could contribute to the solution that they hadn't thought about. So it's just to make sure that all the stakeholders around the table, I've committed to working with both state agencies and with others to work on the language, but I think we need to have everybody working together, or we're at risk, because we have the highest concentration of ash trees in the nation. We have over 900 million. The highest concentration is in northeastern Minnesota. But they have done an assessment of our communities, and we have tons of communities, both small and large, where 20% and more of their entire forest cover is ash. And that has a big role to play in achieving some of the environmental goals that this bill addresses, too, in terms of stormwater management and other issues.
Okay, Representative Junkie asked that the department comment, and if everybody could keep their comments very brief, we have, in addition to this bill, a long agenda, although we do have time set aside later in the day if need be. So if you could make your comments very brief, and you heard Representative Junkie's comments, so if you could respond to those, identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, my name is Quinn Kinney. I'm the Policy Director at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And we are the lead on we are the lead agency on emerging pests. We have been working on the emerald ash borer. We have had people down in the Wisconsin area who are looking at trees as we speak today and all week long. We have a plan developed to activate our incident command structure. And as part of that structure, that would involve working with the other agencies, working with local governments. And I think that that incident command structure will take care of the needs, will cover the needs that Representative Loeffler has identified for working with local communities. So I guess I would be supportive of Representative Junkie's amendment, and I would appreciate, I know one of the other concerns that we have is in the Ag Omnibus Bill that there is a number of task forces that are created, and we are concerned about the time frame of this task force. It's duplicative of work we're already doing, and I think that we don't need that additional language to make sure that we accomplish the needs that Representative Loeffler is looking to accomplish.
Mr. Myers. Mr. Chair, members, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. We do support the Howes and Junkie Amendment. These activities are done. They need to be updated. Updating the Emerald Ash Borer statewide response plan is the appropriate thing to do. It will cover much of the activities here. As Ms. Cheney talked about, the state is moving towards the ICS Incident Command System response method, which will cover and outline the roles and responsibilities of all state and local units of government. So that will clearly identify who is responsible for what, much like we do when there's a fire or an emergency within local borders, how the mutual aid and things like that work. In addition, we have received funding in the finance bill to do additional terrestrial invasive species work, so we'll be looking at how those dollars can be used to achieve some of these activities as well. And finally, I'm just concerned about using these constitutional dollars to do a task force if that's a supplanting issue as these programs were funded previously. Actually, the program was funded 2 years ago. The governor vetoed the appropriations, and the department did the work without an appropriation of the original forest task force as well.
Well, that last statement means that you're clearly not in the supplanting mood, but my suggestion would be what I hear from Representative Junkie and everyone who said things makes sense. My suggestion is that this bill has another stop at Ways and Means, and I would suggest that these Section 2 and Section 3 be combined in some way with the people working together. I think, you know, I think we could probably do it here right now, but I think they could come to something that we could unanimously accept. Probably moving the, doing what they said about moving the appropriation in there and putting some additional language to make sure that this is doing, and giving agriculture with them, whoever, would they letting them have the discretion as to whether reconvening this council was the best way or doing a new thing. So that would just be my suggestion to move
beyond. I think what we'll do, if you're that close, why don't we have those of you that are interested work with staff and see if you can come up with an amendment. And what I'll do is temporarily lay this amendment over. Ms. Novak, would you work with representatives that are interested in, I'll call it, coming up with compromise language? Representative Solberg?
Well, Mr. Chair, I thank you for that, because I think the Minnesota Forest Resource Council has some expertise. It's set up. It's kind of has a, you know, a great deal of presence in northern Minnesota where the ash trees are, and I would hope that we would at least keep that council involved in this problem as well.
Representative Paulson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Loeffler did say something that I want at least those two departments to assure us. She said there are other states who have lost control. Losing control of this would not be a good thing for us. These two departments have just sat before us suggesting everything is under control. You have plans, you have resources, you have communication. I'd like both of you to say for the record, the plans, resources, and communication are in place, and you can assure us that Minnesota will not lose control of this. If you have come before us saying we are unduly concerned, I want you to say for the record that you, those two departments, can assure us there is no risk to Minnesota of losing control of this issue.
Representative Wagenius, you had your hand up for earlier.
Actually, Representative Kaufman actually articulated better than I could have done the question I was going to ask, but I will follow up by asking, in addition to making the assurance that Representative Hausman wants, if we lose control, what is your projected cost to the state, to local government, and individual Minnesotans? We have heard that cost in total, and I want the committee to make sure they understand that cost.
And if you could respond to Representative Hausman's very direct question, too, in terms of what your commitment is, I guess, is the best way of putting it.
Assurance. Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, I think that, I guess what I'd like to assure the committee is that we are learning from the mistakes of other states, and we're confident that we are doing what needs to be done right now to make sure that we are prepared for what might come our way. I don't think that no state that has had a significant infestation of emerald ash borer has been successful in controlling it, but states that have had small infestations have been very successful in containing it, and that's what we are hoping to. We are making every preparation to take care of
them.
Mr. Chair, members, Bob Meyer again. Department of Natural Resources is in consultation with the Department of Agriculture. We're doing everything possible that we can to prevent and slow down the spread of this disease. We are never going to stop it. All we can do is be proactive enough to try to control it and management. But once it does get here, we'll be having to cut down every tree within a square mile radius of those known infestations. It's going to involve the cooperation and the working of all the local units of government, the legislature, and the executive branch to make sure we do succeed. These funds in this bill will just be a small pittance as the dollars that we will need in the future, perhaps. You look at the oak wilt, Dutch elm disease, $30 million is appropriate to deal with Dutch elm disease. This doesn't spread as fast as Dutch elm, but it is going to be an issue, and it's going to be the responsibility of the Department of Ag and the Department of Natural Resources to lead the state through this, but we're also going to need the support and cooperation and working relationship with the legislature and other executive branches to be successful.
And, Mr. Chair, I'll just conclude then with an observation of what we've heard this morning. The department says we have not nearly enough money in here to supervise a grant program. But they're saying, don't worry. We can assure you we've got all the plans, resources, communication. You don't need to put anything in the bill. We've got this handled. I mean, that's what I have heard in our whole scope of advice from the DNR. We don't have enough money for you to supervise the grant program. But this you can do. This, facing this potential crisis, you have it in hand, and you are totally prepared, and we don't need to worry about it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, I don't think in my testimony today I ever once talked about the $1.875 million. I'm focusing on the responsible spending of $125,000 to get the work done and where that should be done. Sure, it should be done in consultation with the Forest Resources Council, but to convene the task force at this time, I don't think it's the right thing to do. We need to update the state's Emerald Ash Borer Response Plan, which will include the activities in this subdivision. But I've never talked about this appropriation, whether it should or not be allocated. Just for the record, Mr. Chair.
Okay, let me ask Representative Morgan. A process was mentioned by Representative Kahn to maybe do some fine-tuning with the language. the people that are interested are here now at this point, so is that a process that you as the author or Representative Murphy as chair of the committee are comfortable with getting together just briefly to see if you can come up with some language so that the...
Mr. Chair, I'm just here to help my chair out. She's really the author of the bill, so I think you better ask her.
Well, we got some spokespersons here this morning, and I know,
and I appreciate
it. I'll defer to whoever you want me to defer to, and Representative Murphy is the chair of the division.
I appreciate your deference to me, but honestly,
Representative Murphy.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair,
and the author of the bill.
I'm confident that Representative Loeffler and Representative Davis, who also has a particular interest in this topic, what we've heard in previous testimony from the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Natural Resources, we can work together to get the main points of that are in Representative Loeffler's amendment into subdivision 2.
What I'm talking about now is a couple of you huddling to take care of the amendment. I would lay the amendment over with that. That's what I mean.
That's involved is Representative Davis, and he's not here. And so I think between now and the next stop, we could do it.
See, the question is, do we adopt this amendment, not adopt the amendment, or do you see if you can work something out
that's
now?
That's the wish of Representative House, who's also on our committee, and Representative Duncan, who is with the egg people for the most part.
Well, and again, I agree with what everyone said. What we want to do is get this workable, and it's just not workable right now. That's the problem, and we do need the money. I mean, the $2 million should be there because, again, that money is sitting there ready to go to grants to local units and others if the infestation hits. So I think it is important to earmark that. So it's not a money issue. It's more a process issue. Again, members, I think we can withdraw it, either work on it now or, you know, before the next stop, reasonable people can come up with some reasonable ideas. So I think it's a good suggestion, Mr. Chair, and Solberg's suggestion of retaining Minnesota Forest Council as a resource in paragraph section 2 is sound, and I think there's some good ideas here, and we can work it out with the departments and the office.
Okay, why don't I just had some eye contact with the one of the two that's moving the amendment, and he was okay with withdrawing it. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, I will withdraw the amendment and rely on Representative Junkie's judgment.
Okay. I'm not sure if you're going to try to work on something now or...
We can work as we move forward. We'll get it
okay.
Together. We're not...
Well, the amendment is withdrawn.
We're not
we now have another amendment...
And Mr. Chairman, I will not offer that amendment today.
Okay, that amendment is not drawn. Okay, any further discussion on the bill? Then we have Representative Rukavina. You indicated you had some discussion points.
Well, Mr. Chair, I just don't know where to begin, you know, with this bill. But if I'm reading the bill right, it looks to me like there's maybe about, I don't know, $150 million approximately for either land acquisition or easement acquisition. Is that correct, Representative Morgan?
Representative Morgan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, again, served on the Outdoor Heritage Council and has the data on the cost of the easement and fee title purchase.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have the acres right in front of me, Representative Rukavina. I'm trying to total the amount. Would you like the acres?
Well, I guess that wouldn't hurt for starters.
Sure. Representative Rukavina, the total, and we have allocations within wetlands, prairies, forests, and habitats for fish, game, and wildlife for those acquired in fee title purchase with a state tilt liability. There's a total of 5,924 acres for those, and that's across those categories. For those acquired in fee title without state tilt liability, it's 2,825 acres. For those with permanent easements, so there's not a tilt liability, but permanent easements, 201,395 acres, and most of that is the UPM Kimini project. So a total of all purchases, both fee title and easement, is 210,144 acres. And Mr. Becker has just some of the sheet on the total amount.
Well, I don't need, you know, that much accuracy to make my point, members. I did, you know, Representative Kahn, I get a kick out of sometimes your doctoral logic, but, you know, let me just tell you how this is going to work here, because I see the DNR commissioner is getting this money, and then staff is going to take a while to purchase everything. It's a great job, though. This is the job, though, Representative, because I couldn't have a job, so I have to cut $5-6 million. You know, we're cutting personal care attendance and hospital reimbursements and everything else. I am so glad that my district listened to me and voted against this constitutional amendment. Because I'm going to tell you something right now, Representative Conn. I got a call this morning from Embarrass Township. For 3 years, Embarrass Township has been working with the DNR to get free land, free, from Cleveland Cliffs. It's an old wild rice paddy. It's a beautiful, they want to turn it into a wildlife management area. For free. 3 years, nothing done. Nothing done yet. The other night you heard me talk about 7 years, members, to get an easement through state property. 7 years, nothing done. You know, when the Metropolitan Council and everybody else starts buying this land in your districts, I'm going to be so happy. I hope I'm still here sitting on this when all of you at your legislative agenda at the end of the year start putting amendments on so your constituents can get paid from the census. The other day I asked the DNR to give us a map because, you know, the Vermilion State Park is so important for that lake. Remember, I asked the question wrong. I'm so stupid sometimes. My head's getting flatter because I didn't ask the right question. I said, show us what land the DNR has on Lake Vermilion. So they put it in color here. Now, this is the school trust land, all the blue. Nearest I can make out, there's probably 8-9 miles of shoreline on Lake Vermilion, owned by the school trust, making zero sense for the school kids. But I got to sit here and beg for a road through school trust land that they're going to pay $7,000 for the easement, then get the road pounded that they make themselves. But here's, it's got to be at least 7 miles, maybe it's 10 miles. Here's the state park, that's acquired land. Here's some more acquired land. But see, here's where I screwed up. I didn't ask the question, right? I said, show me how much land is on Lake Vermilion on the lakeshore. So all of this gray area you see is state land also. This is just, what, 9 townships? You know, hey, coming from the Soviet Republic of the Iron Range, I don't mind public ownership, but we're the third largest owner right now of land in the United States of America behind the federal government and the state of Alaska. Mr. Myers, come on down here for just a second, would you please? A quick question for you, Mr. Myers. Mr. Myers, on your way down, answer the question. What are you doing with the approximately 9 miles of shoreline to raise money for the school kids? And what are you doing with the tens of thousands of other acres to let the public use the state land up there just in these 9 townships in right north of my house, 10 miles? Tell us what you're doing.
Mr. Meyer. Mr. Chair, members, first, to go back to that embarrassed wetlands, the WMA issue.
Oh, you have a great excuse like you always
do. Corps of Engineers, Cleveland Cliffs wants to retain the wetland easement, wetland banking credits on that property. We're dealing with the Corps of Engineers. They won't approve that. There's a similar issue in this bill that we have to deal with as well. But we're working with Congress and Oversight to try to solve that issue. It hasn't been the DNR's fault, just so you know that.
Well,
it's a federal issue dealing with the Army Corps of Engineers and wetland credits. We are trying to do our best that we can to get that acquisition done. It is a very difficult relationship we have right now.
Okay, just a minute. Let me interrupt here, Mr. Chair.
Representative, let's go one at a time.
Mr. Myers, of the 201,000 acres of easements you're going to be doing, a lot of it to protect buffer zones on water, do you think those people are going to be asking you for maybe retaining wetlands or certain other things in their easements? Yes or no, Mr. Myers?
Mr. Chair, members, those issues will be dealt with as the agreements are brought up.
And, Mr. Chair, is it going to take 3 years to get free land? 3 years to get free land, how long is it going to take to get land you got to pay for with those issues? 20 years?
Mr. Meyer,
Mr. Chair, we will acquire those properties as quickly as we possibly can.
Yeah. Okay, members, there you go. Can we address the how much the public is getting to use tens of thousands of acres and maybe 7 to 10 miles of shoreline of school trust land? How much money you're raising for the school trust and how much the public gets to use it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, all of that land is open for public access. All the school trust land is open for hunting. The issue you talk about on Bush Lake Road is that we're trying to get the state access to do some logging on school trust land there, where we do have opportunities to harvest those timbers. We are harvesting timber. The Permanent School Trustment Advisory Committee Forest Management Subcommittee just met yesterday afternoon to talk about these very issues. We're looking to accelerate our land management on school trust lands exchanges. There was some language in the bill yesterday that passed that allows the department to exchange not riparian for riparian, but Class A for Class A lands, which will expedite our school trust fund management, consolidating land into more bigger blocks. But all that public land on Vermilion is open to the public right now. So
let me interject. Excuse me, Representative Rukavina. Mr. Meyer, we have floor session begins in about 6 minutes, and so we're going to have to recess and come back later today. I do have a question. We do have two or three people that have indicated that they have questions in addition to Representative Rukavina. Are those questions absolutely necessary before we vote on the bill? They are. Okay, so what I'll entertain is another question or two by Representative Rukavina, being that he had the floor, and then we are going to recess, and I'm going to have to talk with Representative Solberg, because he's also having Ways and Means after session, and we'll announce exactly what that time will be, but we will be meeting later today, sometime soon after session. So, Representative Rukavina, a couple of concluding comments.
And Mr. Meyer, my point isn't that the public couldn't use it. I never said that. I said, how much is the public using it? They don't even know that it's there, and now we're buying another, whatever the numbers were, 5,900 of fee title and 2,800 and another 201,000 acres of easement, and you can't manage what you have now. And my only point about bringing up the shoreline is that everybody thought this was so imperative to buy that land by adjoining this one little section, and you've got all this other land. It's school trust land. It's supposed to be raising money for school kids, and you're telling the committee you're nickeling and diming my constituents for the last 7 years to put a $7,000 easement through school trust land. I mean, how are you going to do the job of carrying out this $69 million of outdoor heritage money when you can't do what you're supposed to do now? That's my only point.
Mr. Chair, the road easement that you're trying to solve through legislation, it's a negotiation that's been ongoing that we're trying to benefit the kids, the school trust, at the benefit of that landowner. That road would be rebuilt for better
care. Bob, you've got 10 miles of shoreline that's worth hundreds of millions of dollars, and you're spending 7 years to raise $7,000? Oh, come on.
We're going to
not even. It's embarrassing that you would sit there and say this stuff.
Representative Rukavina, we're going to have to recess from the floor session. But before we recess, you know, the chair moves that you've all received. This is a technical amendment, House File 1231. Any discussion on that motion is prepared by fiscal staff. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. House File 580 has been removed from the agenda because it's already in the omnibus bill. And as I mentioned earlier, I'll announce the specific time on the House floor, but it'll be shortly after session that we will reconvene. So we are in recess.
I'd like to reconvene the Finance Committee.
We have the bill chief authored by Representative Murphy, House File 1231. We were in the middle of the amendment or the bill, or hopefully near the end. One of the things I would like to do, however, we didn't get to the minutes this morning, and I know Representative Biskins, who I think was first to arrive, and with his background in education, I know he's very studious, mathematics, I just found out. Would you care to move the minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'll move the minutes to Tuesday, April 6th.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. And I understand, Representative Morgan, that you wanted to provide the committee with some information relative to some information you provided this morning. So that's being distributed, and if you care to comment about what's being distributed, Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The page is passing out some information from the Department of Administration Office of Grants Management under the category of don't answer a question you don't know the answer to. And Representative Biskins, this is a better answer to your question. The statutory language under 16B.97 subdivision 4A1 covers the grants that are in our bill, and most of those, the preference in law is clearly for, as you suggested, the reimbursement grants. And so that is what will guide the grant process in this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing me to correct this.
Representative Biskins, does that get you what you needed then, Representative Biskins?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to thank Representative Morgan for clearing up his obviously deceitful testimony.
Very good. And we were talking about teaching. You know, he's a social studies teacher. You know, we always want to be accurate, even though our science isn't quite as perfect as math would be, I guess. Where we left off this morning, there was an amendment being worked on by Representative Chunky, Representative House, and others. And so, are you ready with that, Representative Chunky?
You've got the A69 amendment. I want to incorporate a couple oral changes. This just came off the press before we got here, and we've since updated. So I'll offer that amendment, and then members, on page 1.6, after the word states, put invasive and exotic. So it should read, update the state's invasive and exotic tree pest plans, etc. Then on line 1.7, delete section and spread of. It's not going to read right. On page 1.8, delete tree pest. I'll ask research to look at 1.7 while we're talking about it, because there's something wrong with the wording there too. After tree pest, it doesn't read right. Then on 1.11, delete all statutory. And on 1.12, delete changes or other measures needed, and insert recommendations. So that will read, the report must include recommendations to assure that it coordinated, etc. So 1.7 is still the only line that's scooped up.
And I see you,
all of them behind me is feverishly, I don't know what that's supposed to say.
We'll incorporate then the changes in your amendment. Did everybody get those changes with the understanding that House Research, do you have a suggestion to clean that one sentence up?
Mr. Chair, the sentence I'm having trouble with is on 1.8, where what I have is responding to and containing and remediation, unless I missed something.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Outbreak.
I guess it will work. 1.7, just delete of tree pests. And it reads, addressing the role of all stakeholders in preventing the introduction or spread of, I guess leave of in there too, just delete tree pests, spread of, comma, responding to, and containing outbreaks, comma, and remediation. And so that should work. Basically, members, this moves that money. It deletes Section 3. It also deletes Section 1, which we talked about out in the hall with all the folks, and realized we didn't need that University of Minnesota training section in there either. Puts the money back in Section 2, and then adds language from Section 3 up as a rider under that. And basically, Department of Agriculture, Natural Resources, Representative Loeffler, Howe, Junkie, and Devens worked on this.
Okay. And those suggested changes, are they...
I've got them all written.
All right, with everybody that was working on that working group on the amendment. Captain Murphy is nodding yes.
Fine with me.
So the suggestions, does everybody have those oral changes in the amendment that were incorporated? Okay. Any discussion? Or you need to move the amendment, however,
Representative. I did move it, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, you did? Okay.
I incorporated those changes.
The motion then is before us on the 869 amendment. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. I have another amendment here, A68, with Representative Rukavina's name on it. You see here?
I thought I saw him a moment ago.
We had a couple of people on the list from this morning while we're looking for Representative Rukavina. Then Representative Kiffmeyer, you were on the list and indicated that you had a question while we're waiting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I did. Mr. Chairman, this has to do with page 49, Article 3, Section 2, page 49, and basically through 51, and probably the concern that I've had folks contact me having to do with the fact that in this one section under C, there's about $7 million for grants for the Metropolitan Regional Parks and Trails, and then there's another section under the Metropolitan Council in line 51H. That's about a total of another, I would say, $22 million. So you've got about $29 million, but this is heavily weighted to the side of the Metropolitan. And then also, just have a concern about the word in line 4933 that says currently recognized, and also on line 53, currently recognized under outside the metropolitan area. So that area, it just seems to me that our rural Minnesota parks and trails don't seem to be getting a fair shake in this bill or with this language, but maybe I'm misunderstanding. Maybe there's something somewhere else, and some clarification would really be helpful.
Mr. Chair and Representative Kiffmeyer, I thank you for the question. I think when you really get a chance to look at the bill itself, maybe on a spreadsheet, I don't know that I have one with me today, but it really is a fair bill around the whole state of Minnesota. Much of the money, as you mentioned, goes to the metro, and an equal amount goes to the DNR that's going to go out to state. And then we have the grant program, which the outstate, the regionals, will very much have access to and be able to use to their advantage. And I think it's a very, very fair bill. And I think if you get a few more minutes, I took you aside, I think you'd be very happy for the whole state.
I don't know, Mr. Chairman, about this piece of science. I'd rather you just state in front of the whole committee. But nonetheless, I'm eager to learn and to see that indeed that is the case. So,
Mr. Chair and Representative Kiffmeyer, we've Representative Howes, not Howes, but Larry Howes. These names are very difficult. Maybe in my fourth or fifth term I'll get it down. We need a couple more Larrys and a couple more H names. But he fought very hard to represent the regionals, the St. Cloud area, the outstate areas that perhaps wouldn't have been hit by some of the DNR projects, say a Parker Trail that's in their current system, or to add to those, or in the metro. So we've really made a great strive and effort to be fair around the state, and I know those aren't probably not exact 30-30 split across all three zones, but it's a very fair bill, and everybody seems pretty happy.
So. Yeah, Representative Howes on this point.
To this point, Mr. Chairman, Representative Howes from Walker. Representative Lilly, I'm just making a broad statement that we're not talking about the one from St. Cloud.
Maybe I had
No, Representative Lilia, I like the way you put it together. And would this be better, would this have a better chance of keeping the DNR out of my district and not purchasing any more land?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative, I was here for the earlier event. I'm not sure whether Mr. I've had good experience with the DNR as far as cooperating on this bill. I don't know if that's helpful to say that or not, but I found that found them to be very helpful. So
I think we all want to move on to the next. Representative Tiffmeyer, were you done?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
And Representative Shemansky.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this kind of follows up on Representative Rukavina's questioning earlier this morning. He was on the same wavelength that I was when I heard the figure of 210,144 acres under easement or acquisition, and I wondered if this is the first phase of this bill in the 25-year duration of this constitutional amendment. How many acres are we projecting to take under control in the state of Minnesota?
Representative Hansen, that's the area you've been working on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Shansky, the recommendations are for one time this year. This is the statute that established the council, the Outdoor Heritage Council, that we had to make recommendations by April 1st. And the council will be working the rest of the fall to make recommendations for the next legislature. So there was kind of an abbreviated schedule. The way that that worked is that stakeholders provided input and the council made those recommendations. But as far as these purchases, these are, there were, just like Representative Morgan said, there were a large number of requests. These were prioritized on the ones that were the highest importance. The particular largest easement is a contained easement. It's one project, and we're funding that, or we're recommending the funding for that so that it's done.
Are you done, Representative?
Mr. Chairman, a follow-up question, if I may.
Representative Shemansky.
All right. Will most of these acquisitions be done with willing landowners? There will be no eminent domain exercise on any of these projects? Or?
Mr. Chair, Representative Shemansky, that's correct. That they would be, you have willing landowners, you know, that there will be appraisals done, so you're looking at the value of the land. So there's a process involved with those willing landowners. And the goal was to work with those willing landowners that are right out there right now to protect high priority land.
Representative Chairman,
just the last follow-up question is, over the 25-year duration of this constitutional amendment, do you project that we're being more aggressive in the early years here in acquiring access and easements on land than we may be in the out years of the duration of this amendment?
Mr. Chair, Representative Shemansky, I believe that we have a backlog of proposals that have been in front of the agencies and other nonprofit groups for a long time. So I think we're kind of in a unique situation this first year because you have this backlog or buildup that's there. I expect as we go through the 25 years, priorities may change, recommendations may change, there may be different priorities among whether it's wetlands, prairies, or forests, or fish, game, and wildlife habitat. Those are things why there's input from the public and why we have the legislative process. So we can look at those needs over the 25 years. The first year is not exactly the way it will be, I think, in any of these funds for the next 25 years.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius.
Oh, thank you. This is a follow-up to that. I think it's important to know that DNR has well over a million acres of land, wildlife management areas they have that have never been restored. And, of course, the Constitution says that this money can and should be used for restoration. And folks on the ground will tell us that a restored wildlife management area is a much happier place for pheasants and all sorts of other things. So it would be good to see recommendations for more restoration.
And Representative Rukavina?
Well, since Representative Hansen is up there, you know, I got so excited this morning with Mr. Myers that I forgot to ask another question I had. regarding the acquired fee. Representative Hansen, so you said that, I wrote it down, 5,924 acres of acquired land that we will hold a fee title to. Is that right? And then you said...
Representative Hansen, we should probably see you pick up on the audio.
Yes. And then you said something that piqued my curiosity, but I got so shook up about easements, and Mr. Myers over here, that, where did he go? Did he go on the roof? Oh, that I didn't ask the question. You said 2,825 acres that we will acquire that we won't have a fee title to. What? How can we acquire land and we don't have a fee title to it?
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair and Representative Rukavina, if you look on the bill, page 4, and starting on line 4.8, you have the Northern Tallgrass Prairie National Wildlife Refuge Protection. And this is... relating to an agreement with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So this is for federal lands. Now, in Representative Murphy's committee, Representative Howes recommended language in here that comes in on 4.18, 4.19, 2.1, 2.2, and 2.3 that has language relating to keeping that in the possession of the state. And so that does adjust that 2,825 a bit because it would be working with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And this was a question we had yesterday that if there, it is retained in state ownership, then you have back to a tilt obligation. I think Mr. Becker is here.
You know, I understand the whole tilt issue with comes back to haunt us northern folks every other year. But you mean so we're going to buy land from the federal government or for the federal government?
Mr. Representative Rukavina, for is how the bill was written, that you would be purchasing land for the with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service within the Northern Tallgrass Prairie Habitat Preserve area in western Minnesota.
But now the state's going to own, Mr. Chair, sorry, now, but now you did an amendment, so the state owns the land?
That's what's in the latter part of that section. That's from Representative
Mr. Powell. Chair?
Representative Rukavina.
Representative Hansen. Well, then why don't we have a fee owner's title to it?
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, this amount that is drafted here on that I read from the 2825 was the acquisition data we had prior to this amendment going on, because this went in as part of the author's amendment, yes, or as part of the bill yesterday. So I believe this has not been adjusted for that to account for that change. And I, Mr. Becker, is that correct? Yes.
So it will, Mr. Chair, it will indicate that we do then hold it in. We own it, we have a fee title, cleared title, and everything else for it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, that's correct now. Mr. Becker, is there another one that's federal in there? Okay. Mr. Chair and Representative Rukavina, there's also a purchase that would be for in Anoka County for an acquisition that would go into their park system that does not have a tilt obligation.
But my question, Mr. Chair, then, is we're not buying any land for the federal government and bringing it over to the federal government.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, my understanding of how Representative Howe's amendment or suggestion would work that's been incorporated is it would be part of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Northern Tallgrass Prairie Habitat Preservation Area. But the way that the amendment, the bill is written now, that would be owned by the federal, by the state government.
And Representative Howes has had his hand up. Do you want to add to this point?
Yeah, to that point, Mr. Chairman, I want to make clear, I think Representative Hansen may have misspoke on how the state isn't buying the land. We are giving U.S. Fish and Wildlife money to buy land, but we are retaining ownership to that land.
That's what I wanted to make sure, that we always own the land. You never know what happens in 10 or 20 years when they might the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service might want to do something else with that land. I felt that we should own the land so we can make the final decision.
So, Representative Rukavina, so we're still buying it on their behalf, but for a project that's theirs, but we are owners of the property.
We are giving them money. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We are giving them money to purchase land that they find within their area, and they will maintain it, but we will own the land.
I wonder, Mr. Chair, members, I wonder what kind of, if that had been in the promotional thing for the 3/8 cent that we're going to be buying land for the federal government, if it would have gotten 58% of the vote. Maybe that should have been in the advertisements too, since there was no other side. But I do have one more question then, but it doesn't relate to Mr. Hansen.
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Myers could just tell me one last question to Mr. Myers. There's two, I guess. Mr. Myers, in your honest opinion, given the fact that in order to get 770 acres of a beautiful area free from Cleveland Cliff mining, it's taken you 3.5 years and the deal still isn't done, what is your best estimate is how long will it take the DNR to accomplish what you've been told to accomplish in this bill to gain easements and purchase the 10,000 acres and easements in here? A decade? 2 decades?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, members, first of all, I think it's important for people to realize all of the acquisition in this bill will not be done by the Department of Natural Resources. We participated through the processes that were put in place and submitted applications and projects and proposals to the Heritage Council, and the Heritage Council recommended appropriations for the department. I don't have a specific list, but I believe it's about $5 million for wildlife management areas, a little bit more, $5 million for aquatic management areas. The bulk of these recommendations are for private or non-profit organizations to do acquisition. We will be working with them. We're passing through the dollars to them. The $187,000 UPM Forest for the Future acquisition, that project's already underway. That will be closed as soon as the dollars are available. That's 187,000 of the 208,000 acres there right now. We're committed to do everything we can to make sure that these dollars are spent in the most expedited way possible, but also meeting the letters of the law with appraisals, reviews, things like that. There's going to be situations that are going to be out of our control, such as the one you're referring to with the federal government. But we're going to do all we can to make sure that we can spend these dollars the best way possible and that they are spent in methods and manners that do meet the Constitution and do set the state up to be the leader in outdoor conservation, recreation, clean water, parks, and we won't have anything to do with the arts, but we want to make sure that this is done the right way because this is a huge opportunity for the state. We're going to do everything we can to make sure it's done the right way.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Rukavina.
So your estimate, Mr. Mayor?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, I couldn't give you a day estimate. We're hoping to get these acquisitions done as soon as possible.
Thank God you're not involved in the arts. They'd still be working on Michelangelo's project. And then my last question, can you give the map to me and Representative Hausman that you have in your bag that expand on this here, just around Lake Vermilion? I know you got brand new maps for me.
Yeah,
and I won't give them to me, so can I have them?
Yes. Say please. No, I have them.
Please.
I'll give them to you right now.
Okay, we have one more amendment. I just remind committee members now, we do have number of other bills, so we do need to move along. Representative Rukavina, your name is on an A-68 amendment.
Right, Mr. Chair, it is, and I don't know if I'm prepared to offer this, but my concern is, and let's take the purchase up in Itasca as an example. So Itasca County has to, let's say, put in roads for the new steel plant, and they go through some wetlands, and the most efficient way to do it is all of that land that just got bought up by you know, the property that we're talking about, the whatever that property is, that deal is. Mr. Myers also forgot to tell you the reason that they're ready to go is because they've been working on it for 3 years. But anyway, you know, it might be the best place to put a little wetland easement. And so does this say that it couldn't be on that property? Those lines 80.12 and 80.13, Representative Murphy, is that what it says?
Rep. Tim Murphy or whoever, Rep. Tim Murphy, would that be your section to comment on?
I think it's just a question.
Well, I'm just wondering, given this kind of a scenario, that we buy all that land for that forest easement up there in Itasca County, and most of the land in Itasca County is already owned by the federal county or state, and there may be no place to put it, and when they're putting the roads into the steel mill, let's say, Representative Murphy, that the best place to put a wetland replacement or mitigate is on this land that we're going to be purchasing with this money. And otherwise, you'd have to go to Aiken or Kuchichin or whatever to do it. But it's more efficient to do it there. This land language, it seems, prohibits doing any wetland replacement on that Forest Legacy property that was be purchased with this money. And I'm just wondering if that's well thought out, and I don't want to mess with your bill because I saw you give me the evil eye, Madam Chair, so I'm going to pull the amendment, but could I work with you on this, because I do have concerns about this.
Mr. Chair, I welcome Representative Rucavino, I welcome your efforts on this. I've been working with Representative Anselk, and Representative Sobert has talked to me and is very concerned about this portion of the bill. There are any number of other people, Representative Genius, Representative Hausman, Representative Morgan, and myself, the House research people, met last night with people that are involved with the project and the people that are urging us to withdraw this language. In the last 4 days, I have spent over 12 hours working on this issue and trying to get an understanding and of how it relates to your area, to Representative Solberg's area, to the purchase of the easements that $20 million are appropriated for in this bill, and what happens to the state as a result. And I have given my word that I will continue to work on this and try to reach some kind of a conclusion. As soon as we understand all the issues that are affected, and just today some more knowledge came to me, some more information came to me about what potential possibilities there are for this land, and some of the information that I've received is I don't know what the word is, but the papers have not been signed for the contract between the company and the state on the easements yet, and we don't want to muck that up either. And so sometimes our questions are being asked and then we can't get direct answers. We may have to have more conversations directly with Blinders. But this does not just affect the easement on that purchase. It also affects, which was brought to my attention, 17 counties are 80% counties on Representative Anselk's bill from last year on mitigating wetlands and how much of their counties are wetlands. And we don't want to group anything up, even though this purchase in this bill affects only 5 counties, but 17 counties are 80% counties.
and we don't want to do harm to what was agreed upon before to them. But one of the questions that we are asking, and Representative Genius can jump in, is how much is there a no net loss? And that has to be answered. And we are moving every day. I have learned more and more. And every day, Representative Morgan and the other people on the committee have been learning more and more. And we have about seven different options for how we can address this. But we haven't picked one yet. And so I'm pleased that you will withdraw and give us a little more time. Representative Genius, Mr. Chair, she may have something to ask.
Representative Genius.
I just wanted to mention that one of the confounding issues here is what bundle of rights the state gets with an easement and what bundle of rights is retained by the easement holder, no matter which one. And since we cannot see the agreement beforehand, it makes it very difficult to write a statute that governs everything. But I would say that of the folks in the state that should be most worried, it would be our waterfowl hunters. So while Representative Luca Fortuna brings up the interest of people who would like to build roads, there are also folks who want to make sure that there are proper places for nesting birds to rest as they come up the Mississippi Flyway and into Minnesota. So I think this is something we've got to be very careful about if we're wanting to protect the waterfowl that come into the state and the hunters who like to hunt them.
We any further discussion on that issue, then it sounds as though Representative Murphy and Representative Rufino were talking that they will continue the dialogue. We do now have present people involved with three of the bills on the agenda. They've come over from conference committee, so I do want to wrap this up. Representative Braun.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I have a meeting conflict this morning, so I apologize if this was covered. And a couple questions, and maybe the information is somewhere and I'm not seeing it. I'm just trying to get a very simple look at the difference between the Lafarge Council recommendations and what is in this bill. And I don't know, if it's not here today, I'd like that information, if there are any differences. I don't know who to ask for that.
Are you prepared today to answer that, Representative Hanson?
Yes. Mr. Chair and Representative Broad, one of the changes was the one we just discussed a few minutes ago relating to the Northern Tallgrass Prairie National Wildlife Protection Area. So that additional language from Representative Howes about ownership of the land, I think you may have heard that. So that additional language came in committee. That's on page 4. On page 2, or excuse me, on 3, on the Green Corridor Legacy Program, I think there were on lines 3.2 and 3.3, there were some additional changes relating to defining the state outdoor recreation system. So you'll see the words as defined in Minnesota Statute Chapter 86A. That was a technical change that the committee. When you go to page 7 and then going on to page 8, and Representative Pepin and I discussed this morning, the small grants program, the responsibility for implementation of the program was changed from the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation in the council's recommendation to the Department of Natural Resources. In administration, on line 11.16, the total allocation is down on line 11.22 and 11.23. The council's recommendation was $695,000 per year for administrative expenses for the Outdoor Heritage Council. And then on line, so that's a less of an appropriation than what was recommended. The statute from last year said up to 1%. So you will see the $175,000 for contract management for the DNR above that, and then you have a smaller number, $403,000 for the coordinating commission rather than $695,000. In addition, and you may remember House File 18 earlier this session about this, the council operating right now when we don't have the sales tax money coming in. The language on the up to $100,000 may be transferred from the water recreation account rather than game and fish fund. So that was what we had after this, that whole discussion about game and fish fund versus water recreation earlier this session. And I believe, and I may have to just refer to council, but the projects following that are the same. Pages, there was a language change relating to local ecotype, and I'm not sure what the page is on prairie restoration to be consistent with what we had already passed in other statutes. That was done in Representative Kahn's committee. And then on page 19, reports submitted to the council should also be submitted to the Commissioner of Finance. And then you have online on page 20, you have the additional, those are additional appropriations for the legislature on appropriations to the Legislative Coordinating Commission and then to the Legislative Auditor. So those are two specific additions, and it kind of goes back to that 695 versus 403 question. And then on line 20.15, the revisor's instruction on removing all references to the Lessard Outdoor Heritage Council and replace those with references to the Outdoor Heritage Council. That's in the body of the recommendations. Then you have separate articles that are new that were done in committee, Article 5, 6, 7, and 8 that do relate to the council. I think that's all of them.
Thank you, Representative Broad.
Thank you, and thank you, Representative Hanson. Is there a way that somebody can put together that list? I appreciate you giving it to me, but I think it might be interesting to more than just me, maybe not, in terms of what the Lessard Council recommended versus what the committee actually brought forward. Because I think a lot of us want to err on the side of the citizen input on this proposal and on this project. And I think the relevance between where the citizen input came in and where the decisions actually landed are going to be important for us to understand going forward in terms of doing some things. Mr. Chairman, the additional question I had was related to a provision on page 37 related to coal. And I hope you hadn't discussed that, but it just seems to me that this is much more appropriate for an environment policy bill. So I'm trying to understand why this policy is being brought forward in this. It's a prohibition on purchasing a certain product, and so it just seems to me that it's outside the realm of this of what we maybe should be doing with this bill.
I would be happy to discuss that with you. One of the things that we found in the water, when we were dealing with the water section of the bill, is that particularly in some of our suburban areas, I think White Bear Lake, discovered that one of its stormwater ponds was so toxic that they didn't know what to do with the stuff when they took it out. And what, so the expense for that community was enormous. And so PCA brought to us some questions about how you deal with stormwater ponds, what is in them right now, and what they're collecting, and how we may be able to mediate or just take out the hazardous stuff. So you'll see that in this bill. and there's some money in this bill for helping communities deal with that issue, this water issue. But it the problem is coming from a product that has PAHs in it, and that's coal tar. And that is, so it's put on some driveways, maybe some parking lots, it runs off, runs into the stormwater ponds, and creates a huge cost. There are alternative products available. So instead of keeping on generating this cost for the state and our communities, this language was in, put into the bill, and it went through the regular hearing process. It's part of a larger package. It's not a standalone provision. It's part of a much larger piece of doing some problem solving.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Virginia, I appreciate the information. My concern is that we don't end up using this bill, not just this year, but in years forward, to tuck policy provisions that, while good in terms of merit, I don't know. But, you know, you can have differences of opinion, but start tucking policy provisions that really should be discussed and debated in an environment policy bill. This should not be an environment policy bill. And so, while it has relationships to expenditures in the bill, it seems to me that we want to be very careful not to start tucking those little things in, which end up being a pretty big deal, could be controversial. I think that's the thing we should keep aside from this type of legislation. And so I just wanted to bring it out in that my hope is that we aren't starting a path of tucking policy provisions which belong elsewhere, which belong in a bill that should be voted on a policy basis in this appropriations type model. So I appreciate the information. I understand the link, but I'm concerned about things like this and the precedent that it sets going forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think the line here between policy and finance, I wouldn't agree that I understand what you're talking about in policy, but here there's a financial burden being placed on our communities that is huge from a particular thing. And not to recognize that and deal with it, we just saw it as a, so to speak, a black hole for money.
Well,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I understand that oftentimes policy and finance are very difficult to separate, but we have an environment policy and environment finance bill, which you bring forward, and I know work very hard on, and it seems to me that if you're going to move toward banning a substance, whatever it is, and on whatever merit it is much more appropriate doing it in that bill than it is in this outdoor heritage legislation. And so I just want to caution us. In terms of moving state policy in this realm, I think that is going to confuse and bring concerns to legislation, which, you know, whether it's the Citizens Council or for the arts or for the outdoors, when you start bringing state policy changes into it, I think that we're going to create some problems down the road that we just don't need to create. And I just want to put that concern on the table. I appreciate the opportunity, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hackworth. Okay, Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to take a moment to respond to just a couple of Representative Braw's comments. First of all, I believe, and Representative Wagenius didn't mention it, but Article 2, the bills that made up Article 2 that she brought forward did go through the Environmental Policy and Environmental Finance Committee, so they were given a hearing in the appropriate jurisdiction. In addition, Representative Braw, as you pointed out, you weren't here this morning. I think we'd be happy to provide for everybody a list of the differences between our recommendations and the Outdoor Heritage Council recommendations. We did acquire a lot of citizen input during our process as well. One of the things I pointed out, and I hope it's in your packet there somewhere, is a beige sheet that lists on the front side the constitutional amendment language and on the back side the investment goals that were adopted unanimously by our committee on March 9. One of the concerns that members brought up about some of the recommendations of the Outdoor Heritage Council was that they did not match up as well as we would have liked with our investment goals. But having said that, we adopted them on March 9. They were a good 4 months into their process at that point. We didn't expect that they would necessarily be following goals that were adopted well into their process. Our hope is that into the future we can work with the Outdoor Heritage Council to continue their good work, but to mesh up better with the goals that the committee adopted with the input of the stakeholders involved throughout the process, starting in January, and working together with us to get the best bill we could together for the people of Minnesota.
We have, and then we're going to vote on the bill, one technical amendment that was just brought to it by the revisor's office. I think they're currently being handed out. Basically, what it does on page 98 is it changes the, or clarifies that we're talking, or public education radio station as opposed to just using the word station. Representative Murphy, move the amendment.
I do, Mr. Chair.
Oh, and it's the one you're getting now. I'm told by the advisor's office that's purely technical.
Yes.
So, any discussion on the amendment? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. Representative Murphy renews her motion that House File 1231, the first committee engrossment, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion carried. Thank you very much, and we'll now move to the folks that came over from the Healthcare Conference Committee. Is that the ones we should take next? And, here we are. That would be Representative Huntley, I think, is next. And that would be House File 1703. The healthcare eligibility provisions amended for medical assistance. Representative Huntley moves the Healthcare and Human Services Finance Division report for House File 1703, the first committee engrossment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate File 1566. Be recommended to pass and placed on the general register.
Okay, that motion is before us. And then this is a Senate file, so we need the motion now to...
Mr. Chairman, I move to delete the Senate language and insert language from House File 1703, the first committee engrossment.
Okay, so members, what we're doing is picking up the House language in the Senate file. Any discussion on Representative Huntley's motion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion carried. Representative Huntley on the bill.
Well, Mr. Chair, I need to make a oral amendment, and that would be to delete Section 1. Section 1 was added as an amendment in the previous committee, and it involves mandating insurance companies cover or do not use the fact that someone's had a previous cesarean section from affecting their insurance rate. And the person that offered the amendment, I voted for it, actually I supported it, but I said that if this goes on and the Commerce Committee wishes to see it, it'll come out. And I talked to the chairman of the Commerce Committee, Joe Atkins, and he said he would have to see it, so that's why I'm moving to delete this section.
Mm-hmm. Okay, everybody understand the motion by Representative Huntley to delete Section 1. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
Mr. Chair, the rest of the bill is the Department of Human Services policy bill, and I believe that everything in it is what they have suggested. I don't think there's anything controversial. A lot of the changes have to do with changes in federal law, and we're making corresponding changes in this bill. The only really interesting thing is sections 22 to 26 removes any reference to health match from any of our laws. So some of you may remember that that started, I think, 6-7 years ago, and it was an attempt to hire a computer company to come in and redo all of our enrollment procedures for Medical Assistance, GAMC, and Minnesota Care, and make it simpler, and the result was a complete disaster. And I think we spent about $9 million of state money on this, and we have almost nothing to show for it. Except there is money retained in the Department of Human Services for any legal fees involved in the court case over this particular issue. That was sort of the highlight of my career. I was opposed to some of the things in that bill, and I actually got on the Lou Dobbs show. So I'll be happy to answer any questions about the rest of the bill, but I think it's all either as a result of federal changes or as the fact that we're have to delete some things and correct the language. I don't think there's anything controversial in it.
Any discussion then on the bill? Well, seeing none, then all those in favor of the motion pass Senate File 1566 as, or be recommended, excuse me, to pass as amended and placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed.
And then, Mr. Chair, we have, we have three members of this committee that are on my conference committee, and a fourth member, Representative Hosh, has two bills up. So if we could do the bills there's a bill by Thiessen and a bill, two bills by Haas. If we could do those, we could get back to our conference committee.
I don't know if you were here. I announced that was our intent as soon as we finished the other bill was to take up Representative Thiessen here. If you want to do yours, Representative Thiessen, that would be 1328, youth violence.
Mr. Chair, I'd move House Bill 1328 to recommend a pass and refer to the General Register.
Okay, and Representative Jason, I understand you have an amendment.
I'd move the DE1 amendment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion on the amendment? Do you want to mention what it is?
It changes the funding so that it's clear that what this provision is doing is there's in the federal stimulus package, there's some grants available that the department would use to pay for this, and so it makes it a zero fiscal note.
Okay. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried.
Briefly on the bill, this has gone through all the committee processes. It's a proposal to take what's been very successful in Minneapolis on addressing youth violence by using a public health approach to it, which the numbers in Minneapolis have showed some really great success, and it's to allow us to take that approach statewide. And I'd ask the committee to support it.
Okay, any discussion? And Representative Thiessen renews his motion that the House File 1328, the first engrossment, be recommended to pass and placed on the as amended, placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Thiessen, you have 384 as well.
I do, Mr. Chair. I would move House File 384.
We need to have Representative Huntley move the division report first. Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair, I move Healthcare and Human Services Finance Division report for House File 384 as the first committee engrossment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Thiessen, you want to move the bill?
House File 384, the first committee engrossment will be recommended pass and placed on the general register.
Okay, and I'd also move the before us and DE3 amendment on this one, the DE3.
Yes. I'd
like to move the amendment.
And the amendment basically strips out most of the language in the bill, which is traveling separately and actually already on the floor, and leaves it with the original bill. And it was sent originally to finance because there was a question about a fiscal note. It turns out there is a zero fiscal note on this language.
Okay, any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried.
Briefly, Mr. Chair, what the bill does, and went through the committees, it asks that our Minnesota Administrative Uniformity Committee, which is currently in place, look at and establish, make recommendations and establish uniform standards for how providers when someone walks into a doctor's office, what the technology would be used to actually process who they are, what their insurance is, what it looks like, so that we don't have providers in the situation of with one plan they have to fill out certain types of forms, with another plan they have to fill out another kind of form and get different information. This would fit uniform standards for how that would all be electronically processed. We're doing this for a lot of things. This would just get this in the queue to establish uniform standards for that.
Okay. Any discussion on the bill? Representative Connor.
Is all this stuff being done in consultation with the Office of Enterprise Technology?
I don't know who, Madam Chair. This is not state program. This is for the private sector, and it's to get the health plans, it's to get the providers, to get everybody who has an interest in this to this table to establish uniform standards. We've done it for how we pay for stuff. We've done it for how we process claims. This would just move it to kind of the next phase.
So this has nothing to do then with state technology standards.
Mr. Chair, Representative Connor, it would only have it to the extent that the state is a payer of through CGIS, in that sense.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative,
I just wouldn't, in the bill after we discussed health masks, want to repeat another health mask.
Yeah, okay.
Representative Clark.
This is paid for by
Mr. Chair, this committee exists and it has an ongoing appropriation. It's just going to be part of their work.
Is this one that you said has
Representative
zero
Clark.
I think Mr. Chairman has a zero fiscal note.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark.
Yes.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, then Representative Thiessen renews his motion that House File 384, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass as amended and placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. We'll now go down to welcome House File 120 by Representative Hodge.
Mr. Chair,
I'm reminded as he's coming forward by Ms. Hornfield that we announced this morning, but just in case, 580 is no longer on the agenda because it's already in one of the omnibus bills. So just as a reminder on that one, seeing that we just passed over it. Representative Hunley on the Hodge bill.
Mr. Chair, I move the Health Care and Human Services Finance Division report for House File 120 of the First Committee Engrossment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Hunley.
I move the House File 120 of the First Engrossment be recommended to pass and placed on the general register.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Hodge on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the committee's time. House File 120 is a bill that gives Department of Health oversight to the Minnesota Rural Health Cooperative. The Minnesota Rural Health Cooperative is a cooperative in Minnesota that represents over 20 hospitals and 30 clinics in rural Minnesota. Right now, Minnesota has 79 what we call critical access hospitals or hospitals in rural Minnesota. 23 of those are represented by the Minnesota Rural Health Cooperative. Health cooperatives were established in 1994 under State Statute 62R with the intention of giving access to health care in rural Minnesota. There was a problem with some of our smallest clinics to be able to have access to health plans to be able to negotiate with them because of their size. The Minnesota Rural Health Cooperative assists in that function by allowing several hospitals and physicians and clinics to be able to negotiate on behalf of a collective group. In no way is it mandatory for health plans to negotiate with the Minnesota Rural Health Cooperative. It is a voluntary function. One of the health insurers, Blue Cross Blue Shield, does not negotiate with the Minnesota Rural Health Cooperative. What this does is give Department of Health oversight to strengthen our original cooperative statute to make sure that if there's any concerns with negotiating or anti-competitive efforts, that the needs and the demands of the consumer are also weighed with the needs and the demands for a competitive price in rural Minnesota. With me is representatives from the Minnesota Rural Health Cooperative that can address some of the questions that the committee may have, but I would encourage the committee support.
Representative
Okay. Any discussion on the bill? There's a citizen that has something from the Federal Trade Commission that she requested to be distributed, so that's fine, just to distribute that. You could identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Gross. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Commerce. I'm the director of health care policy. And Representative Hosh's bill has been through many, many, many committees. And I just want to remind the committee that what I'm handing out is something from the Federal Trade Commission.
I thought it was the woman that...
My associate is the one that...
Okay.
But just want to remind the committee members that the Federal Trade Commission is currently reviewing this COOP for certain anti-competitive activities, and they have some concerns about healthcare costs increasing and stuff like that. Just want to remind the committee that this is not a policy committee, obviously. This is a finance committee. But just want to remind the committee that this activity is still being processed by the Federal Trade Commission about this cooperative. And as Representative Hodge has also indicated, that the health department would be looking this over, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 120 would not change any ability. I mean, if the Federal Trade Commission would like to look into some of the practices, they could continue to do so. I want to make it clear that this bill does not in any way change the practices of rural health cooperatives. They've been in operation since 1995. They've served rural Minnesota well. This has bipartisan support and bi-congressional support. Our congressional representatives in Washington, D.C., Representative Peterson, Representative Walz have written letters of support. Representative Seifert has written letters of support. Our Attorney General has written letters of support in this bill. If there are any concerns, this doesn't limit or prohibit any governmental agency for inquiring or making questions to the Minnesota Rural Health Cooperative. In fact, I think this strengthens consumer protection. If you read the bill, I think it's
Mr. Rothery. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hawk is the testifier. In this letter, the second sentence states that the bills are intended to exempt from state and federal antitrust law certain anti-competitive activities by healthcare cooperatives. What I've heard is more oversight, etc. But I wonder if you could address this fairly broad statement about exempting these activities from antitrust law protection.
Now another gentleman is sitting up. I don't know if who's the question directed at. Whoever wants to answer it. You could identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is David Balto. I'm the former policy director of the Federal Trade Commission, where I served for over 15 years, and I represent the Minnesota Rural Health Cooperative. The way the antitrust laws work is that if a state both clearly sets a goal to have there be supervision of an entity, a cooperative, and then creates a certain level of supervision, the activities of the cooperative under that statute can be exempt under the antitrust laws. The purpose of House Bill 120 is to provide that greater level of supervision to make sure that the conduct is appropriately under that exemption.
Senator Winkler.
Mr. Chair, just I guess a quick follow-up. So your statement then is that the intent here is for Minnesota law to be a tighter regulation than what the FCC would apply, and the FCC objection is based on an objection to having something that would be normally under their jurisdiction taken away?
Mr. Chairman, what we're saying is that what we want is for there to be an adequate level of supervision so that this antitrust exemption would apply. One thing I want to make clear to the committee is that the FTC and the never says an exemption is appropriate. The FTC hates all exemptions. So, for example, if this was a bill to strengthen supervision of farmer cooperatives by farmers, the FTC would have still sent you a letter saying all cooperatives are bad, all price setting by cooperatives are bad. So, you know, it's just their policy that they don't like any kind of exemption, even though it's clear that under the law an exemption is appropriate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Any further discussion? Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the witness, Mr. Balto, I mean, I assume, based on what you just testified to, you've got this February 26th letter. It was addressed to you from a Randall Marks. There's a letter from the Federal Trade Commission, Mr. Balto, that was addressed to you on February 26, 2009, where it says that this isn't about... the FTC is investigating the rural co-ops, right?
Mr. Balto? Yes, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Emmerich. Yes, the FTC has been conducting an investigation of the co-op, as it does in many situations. It conducts many investigations, and I know from 15 years of experience that most of those don't lead to enforcement action.
Mr. Chairman, this is a very serious thing, Mr. Balto, and I mean, I know you want to treat it lightly, but I've heard this bill in three different committees. Frankly, I'm very disturbed by what seems to be facts left out irresponsibly or not responsibly, and light comments about this ongoing investigation isn't a big deal. There's a letter that was sent to you back in February 26, and it was sent to you, Jeffrey Miles, an attorney in Washington, and Mike Hatch, an attorney at Blackwell Burke, in which it pointed out that two witnesses who had testified on this bill or in support of this bill had made material misstatements about the ongoing activities of the FTC and specifically with respect to something that you just mentioned, that it's about more state supervision, I believe, and I may have misstated that. You can certainly correct me, but whether it goes to enforcement or not, the letter that went to you, it says very clearly, we are investigating serious allegations that the MRHC unlawfully collectively negotiated reimbursement rates on behalf of its members, and thus that conduct resulted in significant anti-competitive harm, in fact, antitrust violations. My concern is, as we push this thing forward and we're told all the way through that really this is a good thing, it's going to tighten things up, it doesn't affect, it doesn't violate any existing laws, that's not what the ongoing investigation suggests. Shouldn't we wait until this gets cleared up and we know that, in fact, there are no legal issues surrounding this so we get correct information, Mr. Balto? Shouldn't we wait until that's done?
Mr. Balto?
The legislature last year, first of all, FTC investigations take a tremendously long time. This one has already taken a tremendously long time, and there's no guarantee that it's going to be resolved at any time in the future. Second, I'd be glad to talk to any member of this committee about what the actual evidence in the FTC investigation shows. We think there's very strong evidence that the activities of the cooperative have been pro-competitive. The cooperative has helped bring new insurance companies in the market. The cooperative has helped go and assure a high level of quality of care by monitoring the conduct of hospitals and providers, by providing a customer complaint system, by helping insurance companies go and make sure that people are providing a high level of care. I think the evidence, you know, is actually pretty compelling that the cooperative has acted in a pro-competitive fashion. If the, but, you know, what this does is it says in the, you know, what this does is it says that when the cooperative continues to act after the statute is passed, there will be sufficient supervision that to make sure that nothing anti-competitive happens in the future.
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
Mr. Balto, I have to express my extreme disappointment because you've done it again. You didn't answer my question. I asked it on purpose. Did you get the letter? You haven't even acknowledged that you got the letter back in February. You sit before this committee, and thank you for at least doing that, because in the last couple, I didn't have the opportunity to hear you. And you argue evidence that we don't get to see. And you ask us as policymakers to make decisions on things that you're going to represent to us are facts, when I sit through committees and nobody wants to talk about them until somebody brings up a letter and says, but you're being investigated. You're being investigated for this very issue, and now I have somebody in front of me that says, essentially, don't worry about it. You know, these are things that happen all the time. They drag on for a long time. Really, it's not a big deal. Oh, and by the way, we have overwhelming evidence that the co-op hasn't violated any antitrust laws. Just begs the question. Why then, if there's overwhelming evidence, do we get to the Finance Committee on May 6th of 2009, when this thing's been run through committees for a couple of months, and we haven't been given any of that information? I have a hard time, even though I really appreciate the fact that you come here today and you state this position on behalf of those of the rural co-op that you're representing. But I don't think that's fair for policymakers who are asked to make a decision that this is a good thing or a bad thing based on the lack of information that's been provided, the misinformation that's been provided, and now just we're supposed to trust that all is well and good and this is the way we should be voting. I think that's a bad way to do business. I think, with respect to you, that if that is the case, then we should have more time to adequately absorb this, see all the information instead of just bits and pieces, and get the cloud removed so we know that, in fact, this is the right thing to be doing.
Representative Huntley.
Well, Mr. Chair, there's nothing in this bill that would stop the rural co-op from continuing and doing whatever it is they're doing. What this bill does is put more supervision by the Department of Health over what they're doing. So if we vote this down, we won't get that oversight. So I suggest that we vote this up, and the fact that they're being investigated is interesting, but if every business had to shut down because they're being investigated for something, half our economy would be gone.
Okay, any further discussion? Well, seeing none, then Representative Huntley renews his motion that House File 1120, the First Committee Engrossment, be recommended to pass. Pardon? Yeah, 120. And placed on the General Register. Seeing none, Representative Kinsley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, can you explain, in light of the fiscal note, why we would send this to the General Register and not to Ways and Means?
When I looked at the fiscal note, I think it has zero impact in the end. There's an $8,000 cost, but the net result was zero. Net cost saving zero.
Yeah.
Now that's why I made the motion I did. There, Representative Huntley made actually the motion. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. We now will go to Ms. Fritz. Is she okay? Representative Fritz, House File 266. Representative Murphy, would you care to make a couple of motions? Or Representative Huntley, excuse me.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Health Care and Human Services Finance Division report for House File 266, the First Committee Engrossment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Huntley?
I move House File 266, the First Committee Engrossment, be recommended to pass and placed on the General Register.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. House File 266 is about parental fees. And this legislation clarifies that if a parent pays their parental fees through an employer's health care spending account, that the parent is responsible for paying taxes owed on any amount reimbursed. This notice will be incorporated into the regular mailings from the Department of Health to parents. This language is developed to assure families we're in compliance with IRS regulations and to encourage all Minnesota employers to allow the use of healthcare flexible spending accounts by employees paying parental fees to access medical assistance for their children with disabilities.
Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, we have a bill by Representative Loeffler.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. House File 1728. They're up getting her chair moves that healthcare and the Healthcare and Human Services Division report on House File 1728, the First Committee in Grossman. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. We won't move the bill though until we've got an author. Well, up in not in the committee, but up in the system. Okay. We're in temporary recess until the author arrives. Reconvene our brief recess. Representative Loeffler, I moved in the committee passed the division report. So the chair moves that House File 1728, the First Committee Engrossment, be recommended to pass and place in the general register. And if you could tell us what the bill is about.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Sorry for the delay in getting the word and running down some taxes. This bill is a Department of Human Services bill. It's gone through three previous committees. What it does is do administrative streamlining and make technical corrections and updates. Statutory authority related to child care provisions, program integrity, and the provisions related to adult support. And most of it is related to new technology, getting rid of redundant language that is now handled through rules, that sort of thing. There's some efficiencies. We sent it to finance because we weren't sure if there was going to be some fiscal implications with parts of it because it was tied in with a new computer system in the child care area, and it has no fiscal notes, which is why it should go separately to the floor rather than, and it wasn't incorporated into the omnibus.
Any discussion on the bill? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. That concludes our business for today, but we meet again tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. We have, again, several bills on the agenda. Just so everybody has full knowledge, one of the bills, House File 1132 by Representative Dill, was added to the agenda last night, and if you notice, the agenda said reconsideration of, and that's the timber sales bill. Just wanted to make sure everybody had noticed that we were going to reconsider his timber sales bill. It's still in the possession of the committee. I never did sign the report, so that motion will be made at some time tomorrow morning along with the other bills that were before it. Okay, with that, meeting adjourned.